So what you'll get now is a little bit more of an academic perspective onto this whole interaction topic, which can be approached from different perspectives, of course. We've seen a great talk yesterday about wearables and fashion design, where a lot of human-computer interaction takes place. But what you'll get now, as I said, is more the academic perspective. So I work with tangible interaction, and I'll introduce you to that area, and I'll specifically focus on materials, toolkits, and the human senses and the body, which are so the basic ingredients we work with. And looking at human-computer interaction really within the last 40 years, not much has changed. It just started recently, but before mouse and keyboard was the main user interface we had to deal with. And these pictures are from a demo from 1968. Which was the first public demonstration of the mouse as an input device, which survived until today. Something that didn't survive is this here on the left-hand side, which is a chord keyboard, which is like a piano, which is five button thingy that they thought was could be useful, but it didn't survive. So the mouse and the keyboard survived. And looking at this, how we interact with this, the human is really reduced to not much. So we basically need one finger for input, and then one eye, or maybe, yeah, one eye and 2 ears would be enough for the output channel to understand what the computer is telling us. So there's really much more about the human we could use for interaction with computers. So we want to get rid of this limited interaction style. And this is happening already, of course, and especially important as we are now in this era called ubiquitous computing. So computing often is divided into three main eras: the mainframe era, the personal computing era, and the ubiquitous computing era, which is taking place now, and which basically means that computing is embedded into the whole surrounding, our whole environment, and that basically the whole world can become an interface. For example, that computers are in places where you don't recognize them anymore, like in your car, in traffic lights, everywhere. So makes it even harder to design user interaction now, because devices get so many different appearances. So we have to come up with new ideas. Like naive physics would be one, body awareness and skills would be one area. That means that we really know how to move our body, and that we have an awareness how the skeleton is positioned, for example, at a specific moment. And this, for example, this knowledge is now used, if you know the Kinect and the games you can play with it, they use the body knowledge much more than ever it had been used before in human-computer interaction. Then environment awareness and skills is something that we know how to navigate, or we have specific strategies how to navigate, and those can be applied also in digital map navigation. And social awareness and skills is an area that addresses the habits and maybe the unwritten rules we have established in communicating and dealing with other people, that do play a role, even like when we transfer communication to a digital domain, for example. So the idea is to really start with the knowledge and the skills we have here. And tangible interaction is an area that specifically starts from our knowledge to deal with objects around us. So the basic idea is here that we more or less directly can grasp data in our body space. And that's possible with objects that are connected to digital data that are tracked in a way. So this would mean that we don't have a separate data space and body space like I have with my laptop here anymore, but we have this unified space. And I'll show you an example how this could look like. And this is an early concept, the marble answering machine. Let's see. From a design student that was a master project at the Royal College of Art. And in this example, answering machine messages are connected to marbles.
1 p.m.
Hi, Simon. It's about 1 o'clock now. I was wondering whether you're going to come to the football. It's the weather's a bit wet and rainy, so I understand if you don't. Other than that, well, yeah, give us a ring if you're in. Okay. Bye.
So, and the idea is that certain functions can be triggered by manipulating the marble, like saving, for example, a message, erasing a message, playing a message.
Hello, a message for Simon Fitz. Your flight is BA6213 at 12:30, Monday, 15th of October. Your job number is BS436215, and the pickup address is 44 Camden Mansions, Kensington Mall. Bye.
And it's also combined with offline interaction, like making notes.
2:45 p.m.
Hello, Simon, it's George. Could you give us a ring? My tone number is... Talk to you later. See you. Bye.
So, and then it's used as a token to directly call someone. So this is basically the concept behind tangible interaction, that you manipulate objects and then by doing that trigger certain functions with a computer. So another famous example is the Rig Table. Who knows this music interface? Okay, just so you'll find it online. I don't show a video now, but by manipulating objects on the table, you change parameters of the music. And this is very popular. It's used a lot, and it's already a project also. So you can find it in museums, for example, or in exhibition spaces. This is one of the application areas where you find actually quite a lot of examples of tangible user interfaces. Then another area would be architecture and also landscape architecture. This is more a precursor of the whole tangible interaction idea, but a very nice one, as this architect John Fraser already in the 80s thought about how nice would it be to have real models of architecture which directly are transferred into a digital model rather than just directly only working with a CAD program. And this has to do a lot about using the real space, and it's much easier for people often to imagine how things will look like, and it's easier to work in groups, for example. And he built an early prototype of this where he designed these building blocks which could be stacked together, and when stacked together, this would be they were connected, and this could be realized by the system. And another example going into a similar direction are these works from MIT Media Lab, where they used clay and sand to sculpture a landscape, and then coupled this to digital information. That means like simulations of, for example, how rain would, how water would flow in this landscape, how shadows would be. And this was possible in that case with a laser scanner that detected how the landscape looked like. And then another area is interfaces for kids, and one popular application domain is tangible programming there. And you see two similar examples here on the left side. It's also blocks which can be stacked together to control a submarine. And on the right side, it's like puzzle pieces with direction information on it. And when stacking them together, a real robot would navigate through a building. As examples. Now, looking at the space, there's a huge potential actually with tangible user interfaces to rethink the materials we interact with. When looking at human-computer interaction and what materials have been used during the last 40 years or so, the space is quite limited. The variety is quite limited. So now there's these huge possibilities to use diverse materials and to see how well they work for interaction. And again, we saw nice examples of wearables yesterday. And this would be another example here. But we find many explorations actually. And it's worth to look further into this. And one example I want to show you, that was an exploration I did, is the soap bubble user interface, where we wanted to see what happens if we use soap bubbles to interact with the computers. So what we built was a little soap bubble machine, that's the blue one, where you could generate single soap bubbles in a specific size and fill them with smoke. The idea with the smoke was that we could project onto them. And then they would drop onto this surface, which was filled with a dark liquid, and they could be tracked from below. That means we could use the number of soap bubbles, the sizes, and the locations to control a computer program. And what we did is we controlled light in the room and music. And we wanted to see if people, like, how people would use this. And so what they did is they interacted with the soap bubbles in different ways. Like, they had to move them. Like, how do you move a soap bubble? So cautious people would start waving, for example, which is a very imprecise interaction, but it works. You can move the soap bubble. And then a little bit more precise, but with much more body interaction, would be to blow the soap bubble into a direction. And then the next step, and the most precise but also the most challenging, because soap bubbles burst easily, was to touch them, because that's possible, but you have to get your fingers wet. And many people really did that. So we showed this soap bubble interface in many different areas on many different occasions, and we were surprised how many people really engaged with this. And I'll show, like, this, let's see, just a tiny impression how this looked like. So, and when we did this, of course, we don't aim for using soap bubbles whenever it's possible for human-computer interaction, but it was more an exploration how a material with its specific properties can really guide how we interact with a computer. And thinking this further could even mean that at some point we will generate smart materials into the with the properties we want people to interact with. She's generating the bubbles and then trying to move them to certain points. And then they burst and she's trying again. Okay, soap bubbles for interaction. Then, of course, not only the properties are important, but also what meaning do materials have? And soap bubbles, of course, are very playful, and that's how people approached the installation directly. And here I'm showing another example where candles are used for an implicit interaction, ambient communication. Which could be something that is done via Skype or so. In Skype, I can see who is online. But in this case, the idea was to integrate a candle into such an ambient communication device. Okay, and then I have another example. This is a music interface again, where the idea was to use Jelly for interaction. So this is a toolkit also everyone can use. So also very playful interaction, and which makes people curious to touch. So then next to materials, I mentioned in the beginning already, the body is in the focus, of course. And there's this term embodied interaction with embraces this sort of I'll quote that embodied interaction is the creation, manipulation, and sharing of meaning through engaged interaction with artifacts. So what we see here is that now even computer science really starts more from the point that humans are socially and physically situated and thinking about the bodies, which has not been the case all the time. So before, it was more the Cartesian way of thinking, that the body of mind is sort of separated and the mind is really what we have to think about, and the whole cognition that affects interaction. But now there's this this whole research string, which is based on phenomenology, and I have here the Merleau-Ponty with his phenomenology of perception, which starts really from the body. Insofar as I have hands, feet, a body, I sustain around me intentions which are not dependent on my decisions and which affect my surroundings in a way that I do not choose. So all we know and what we learn is really dependent on how we experience the world around us with our body and through our body. So this is something now where human-computer interaction researchers start from. But can you really apply the body knowledge we have? So, and I want to show you one example where some research is done, and this is the area of embodied metaphors. This is research coming from linguistics, for example, focusing on some abstract concepts we really have deep in our like experience with our body, but carrying around us on a higher level, which is, for example, the, here as an example, the in-out schemata, which means that we have an abstract concept of in and out, what we experience as a little child already. And then we transfer it to other areas in life, which are not really dependent on containers, but we say things like, I'm in love, or I'm backing out of the agreement, or let's leave out some details. So this all has this in-out schemata in mind. And there's more. There's like up-down, for example, which is also mapped to certain meanings, like up is more, is happy, and sad is down, for example. And there's a lot of these meaning which we apply unconsciously, which can be used for interaction. And one example I just want to briefly show is the Moso Tangibles. That's a set of artifacts that are made for kids to learn about the concepts of pitch, volume, and tempo in music. And the idea was to use these artifacts to control either pitch, volume, or tempo, and to use embodied metaphors to map how to control them. That's always the problem interaction designers have. How do you map these physical movements to certain functions? So what they did, for example, is they designed this puller. Which embodies the near far schema, and they mapped, for example, near to low pitch and far to high pitch. Or in this case, they mapped the rotator to control volume. And what they did is that slow movement was mapped to soft volume, and fast movement was mapped to a loud or higher volume. And they tried out a number of mappings and evaluated this. This is just to get an idea how, where this can lead to if we integrate body knowledge into interaction. And then the third very important area that brings this field further is really toolkits. And that's also where research, I guess, the companies and the really growing maker scene all sort of interfere. One example I have here is, for example, multi-touch interaction that we all know now, from the iPhone, for example, which came up 2005 to 2006, actually by someone who found out how you can design large multi-touch tables in a very low-cost, easy way, which triggered a huge movement outside of universities even, to build these tables and to work on this. And what happened then is that this open toolkit community core vision was started as a project, as a web project, that helped the whole community and went back into university to work on this. And then also the iPhone came up using different technology. But this this whole scene is really very connected, and especially in tangible interaction, very close to the maker movement. And another example that is currently, it currently has a huge influence embodied interaction is the Kinect. I already mentioned that. It came onto the market as a game console, but then it was directly used for many other things because there was an SDK also, a development kit to use it for other things. And it's really popular, for example, in the maker scene. This is from Thingiverse, which is a platform where people put designs and plans, for example, for 3D printouts or laser cuts. And what you see, what I found there was a handle on the left, on the left for a Kinect, to use it as a 3D scanner. What we see here is one of those printouts from a 3D scan. So it's the Kinect is used in a variety of ways, and this is really important to bring this whole field further. And I also want to show you in another toolkit, which is really new and coming out at the moment, and I'll show you the video here. This is based on Arduino, which is also such an example. It came from an academic environment and is really, really important in the whole maker scene. And this is now developed at MIT Media Lab, again, academic, and it's built up on Arduino and going back to the maker movement now. You can buy it at Sparks Fund, for example, and you can do very easily lots of funny things with it. So I'll show you.
I'm Jay.
And I'm Eric. We're graduate students at MIT Media Lab.
We have a dream that everyone is an inventor.
So we created Makey Makey to let you invent just by alligator clipping. Alligator clips stuff like bananas to your Makey Makey. When you touch the banana, your computer just thinks you're touching the keyboard. The front has arrow keys, spacebar, and mouse left click. When you're ready for more, flip the Makey Makey over and you've got more keyboard keys and support for the mouse. You can even use the board like an Arduino when you are ready. No programming, no breadboarding. You don't even have to install software. Just plug it in USB.
Order your Makey Makey today and start changing how the world works.
So, yeah, this is to show that it's really getting easier and easier, and I'm showing this also to encourage everyone to starting getting engaged with this. And it doesn't mean at the beginning, this is so nice because you don't need any programming knowledge. But as I mentioned, there's an Arduino in it and you can gradually learn more and get deeper involved. And it's really something that is not taking place only in the big companies or at the universities anymore. So it's really widespread. And I will end with this, and I'm curious about your comments and questions. Thank you.